Moncrief on News Talk.
Here's a book you can get your hands on this coming Thursday, February the 20th. You can pre-order it now, and it is all about Father Ted. Father Ted is marking its 30th anniversary, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined now by a woman whose unique insight into what went on behind the scenes on that iconic TV show. Lisa Evans was a producer on the show and has now written a new book entitled Picnic on Craggy Island, The Surreal Joys of Producing Father Ted. It's released this week. Good afternoon, Lisa. How are you today?
Hello, I'm grand, thanks. Yeah.
It must have been an absolute joy to work on this show.
It was a joy and it was a massive responsibility because it was so good. The scripts were so great. And I always felt that I was responsible if things went wrong all the time. So, it was a joy, but probably more of a joy in retrospect.
Right. Same as most things in life, it has to be said. When you're in the middle of it, it's hard to sit back and enjoy it. You came into it at the end of season one. How did you come into it?
I was working as a comedy producer at a company called Hattrick, and there was a wonderful producer there called Jeffrey Perkins, who was sort of my mentor, really. And he showed me a script called Think Fast, Father Ted, that he was going to be producing. And I read it and just fell in love. It was, the funniest script I've ever read, and I thought it was wonderful. And I became a Ted super fan of the first series. I was nothing to do with it, but I loved everything about it. And I went and fangirled Dermot Morgan at a party, and I was telling everybody how brilliant it was. And then before it went out, even the first series, Jeffrey phoned me and said that he'd taken a job as head of comedy at the BBC, and did I want to produce the second series? So it landed in my lap. So I was already a huge fan. And then, I was suddenly producing it. It was amazing.
My God, I was just reading an article you wrote for the Irish Times, and you talk about that, a year later, that you're in studio for the first series of Father Two, which was called Hell, for that one, with the priests going on holiday. That seems to have been an unbelievable experience.
Well, it was in between the first and second series. It had suddenly become incredibly successful. The first series had gone out. It was an instant hit. Everybody adored it. And Hell was the first studio recording of the new series. And the studio audience was crackling with anticipation. I could feel it even from where I was sitting behind the scenes. And the first scene started, which was a studio scene with Ted and Dougal talking about going on holiday. And Mrs. Doyle comes into the parochial house living room with a cake tin. And she tries to tempt them to have some cake and they don't want any. And then she says there's cocaine in it. And, we expected a laugh, but the laugh was like a rocket taking off, and it just went on and on and on and on. And, I say in the book, I remember glancing at Graham and Arthur, and they were looking faintly horrified. They were sitting behind the director, and, it was a good line, but was it that good? And the laugh went on so long that when we eventually, went to the edit, to edit it for broadcast, I ended up taking 6 seconds out of the line. I mean, I have never done that before or since in comedy.
It's hard to believe. And that was in the same episode as that. Dougal went off, Ardal O'Hanlon, and kind of without telling anyone, he got married.
Well, what happens is when you're shooting a series like that, you go on location first for however many number of weeks you need to do to shoot the outside scenes. And we went to County Clare to do that. And then you come back to the studio, in our case in London, and you shoot the indoor bits. And between those two things, between location and studio, Ardal got married, which is fantastic. And he came, and I saw him walk in the first day of rehearsals. And everybody was going, hooray, Ardal, hooray, now married man. And all I could do was stare and sort of croak, oh no, because he'd had his hair cut clearly for the wedding and thought about it. And which meant that all the location scenes, his hair would be about an inch and a half longer than all the indoor scenes. And of course, so every time he opened the door and went outside, his hair would appear to grow about an inch and a half. So I looked across at the makeup designer, Christine, and she looked back at me and she mouthed the word wig at me. And as soon as the rehearsal was over, she whisked him off to a wig maker, and he wore a toupee for the first half of the studio.
Oh, those insights. Honest to God, Lisa. I'm going to go back to watch it again now to see if I can notice the wig.
Yes.
But that is not the most amazing thing you have to do, is it? Because it seems to me one of the most amazing things involved a certain sheep in the episode, didn't it?
Chris the sheep. Yes, there's an episode in the third series called Chirpy Burpy Cheep Sheep. And Ted puts a bet on which sheep is going to win the King of the Sheep contest on Craggy Island. And there were scenes outdoors with the sheep, and that was easy because the parochial house is owned by a farming family and Mr. McCormack has his own sheep. So we just shot Mr. McCormack wrangling his own sheep. But there were also bits in the episode where the sheep comes into the living room and it has to wear a pair of headphones. And it was obvious. I mean, I wrote a note to myself when I first saw the script. We are going to have to look at this very carefully whenever there is a sheep in the script. And it was obvious we would need a different sheep, obviously, for studio in London. We weren't going to fly Mr. McCormack's sheep from Clare to London. And we would need a tame sheep, a friendly sheep for the studio. So I took lots of pictures of Chris and gave them to a member of the art department who was responsible for finding a tame sheep. And we got back to London and you know, I used to worry intensely about everything. And I was phoning her up about every 3 days saying, any sign of the sheep? Any man managed to find a tame sheep yet? And eventually on the week of the studio recording Chirpy Burpy Cheep Sheep, she phoned me on the Tuesday and said, you know, we found the sheep, no problem. And I said, but does it look like Chris? And she said, oh, yes, no problem. It's tame sheep. It's coming from Wales with its owners. It will be here on Friday. And on the Friday, which was a studio day, about midday, I got a phone call. And somebody said, Lisa, can you go to the car park, please? And I went out the back of the studio to the car park and the sheep had arrived. And, you know, it was alive, so that was good. But it was about half the size of Chris. It was had a white face instead of a black face. And it had been a fight the day before and had a big stitch up down the side of its face. And I remember looking at it and thinking, but we have no choice. We have to use this sheep. So I had to do the most ridiculous thing I've ever done before or since. I had to send the sheep to makeup. A brown face for the studio recording. And it's the kind of thing I worried about intensely. But to be honest, I don't think anyone ever noticed. If you look at the episode, they're completely different. But, you know, really? The flow of it.
Oh, my God. It sounds like, I mean, I know it's difficult. And every week you'd be faced with a new script, which every script must have been just full of these new challenges for you.
Yes. I mean, when I took over in the second series, it was just, you know, I read every script with such joy and then I'd think about how we would do it. By the third series, I knew the series so well that it was hard for me to detach myself when I read the script. So although they were wonderfully funny, another part of my brain was thinking, right, we need 2 stuntmen for that. Right, we need another 14 people. We can't do that in Clare. We'll have to do that somewhere else. You know, and it would tick off all the difficulties of doing it. And but also, as the scripts came in for the third series, it was obvious to me there was lots and lots of location filming, lots of scenes that could only be done outdoors in Clare. And so I said to Graham and Arthur, I suggested tentatively, Could the last episode maybe be one set all in studio, a bit like the aeroplane one? And because we only had 3 weeks on location, you know, we were going to run out of time. But that was an incredibly stupid thing of me to say, because when the last script came in, obviously they viewed it as sort of challenge. Because when the last script came in, it was the one, Speed 3, set on milk floats with bombs on them going round and round.
Yes.
Round. You know, it was all on locations.
And you had to... You had to
crawling
build.
Back to Channel 4 and say, you know that hotel we got with 150 crew? I mean,
yes.
Can we have another week of it?
Oh, my God. You had to build a roundabout for that and you had to import a milk float as well.
We did because Ireland, I was told Ireland didn't have electric milk floats, only you know, petrol, diesel ones. Mm. So we brought our own milk float with us. But also we needed a roundabout. And they just... We couldn't find one, to be honest. So the art department built one and put it in the middle of a wide crossroads in Kilfenora. So that's it. So that was a plywood roundabout, specially built.
One of the things you mentioned about this and why it's so remembered is the love. And I can tell from our listeners straight away, the love for not just the film, but the season, but the actors in it are still to this day adored. One listener wants to ask you about Frank Kelly and what he was like on set.
Oh,
they say, I'd love to think he kept it method and stayed in character. He was quite a dapper
Frank
intellectual.
Such a gentleman. He was such a gracious, cultured, urbane, delightful man. He was really nice. Week after week, he had to, you know, be covered in this disgusting makeup with rivers of, you know, fake wax coming from his ears. And when we were on location, really nobody wanted to sit by him on the catering bus because he looked so revolting. Poor Frank. But you know, he was such a good actor, and it was difficult for him in studio rehearsal because he had to sit in that chair in the living room for sometimes hours waiting, you know, keeping concentrating so he wouldn't say women's knickers at the wrong point or he'd remember to say it. And he never got it wrong. He was, but very occasionally, I think, when I watch a series, I can see it's Frank in the corner of the room and not Jack. And just the alertness in his eyes. He's just. But he was fantastic, and he put up with an awful lot. You know, water poured on his head and looking revolting. But on the other hand, everybody loved him. And I reminisce about we was in the big hotel on location we stayed in. We got back, you know, late off location one night, and Frank's still in costume. And I walked into the hotel with him, and we realised there was a wedding going on in the basement ballroom. And I said to Frank, "Oh, go on, go into the wedding." And he must have been tired, but he really went for it. He flung open the door and shouted, you know, "F the lot of you." And there was this roar, and, you know, and he must have been in so many wedding photos. It was really sweet.
Oh, man. Listen, I could talk to you all day. The stories are wonderful. And as I say, it's so loved. And in our house, and I'm sure like many other houses in Ireland, a day doesn't go by when you don't quote from it. So the book is this Thursday. It's a picnic on Craggy Island, The Surreal Joys of Producing Father Ted. At least the very best to look at that. Thanks very much for joining
us. Thanks very much indeed.
Bye, Tom. Love you, Tom.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.